mouth. She wants to ride it. She's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever.
Alex Strofe is our cousin sub of the day today on a Wendorf Wednesday on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Now, you were not alive for that 1996 Super Bowl run.
I was not.
Are you aware that there was a movie called Reggie's Prayer?
As of about 42 seconds ago, yes.
Okay, so you before hearing that open and Chewy talking about the Reggie's Prayer, you were unfamiliar.
Unfamiliar, yes.
Okay, completely. All right.
Now, as we've talked about many times, my movie knowledge certainly not up to snuff.
Well, no, but I'm assuming
to begin with.
When it comes to like these random Packer movies that get made, like I know Willie.
Well, I've
and Tausch,
never seen Pitch Perfect.
Pitch Perfect, the movies? What does that have to do
what
with
a
anything?
Strange thing to mention.
Well, wasn't like Clay Matthews and
Bakhtiari
in that?
They made like a cameo.
Okay, well, I've never seen it.
Yeah, but
doesn't that count?
I guess. I mean, I was more talking about these random movies.
Sure.
That happened. Like,
what's the
I
new one that just came out?
So that's the thing. Wilde and Tausch always talk about the 60-yard line because I believe Tausch is in that one. And you know, so I have not. I still have not seen the 60-yard line.
Going to be honest, probably never will.
So you've never seen it either.
No.
Thanks for being honest, Josh.
And even though you are. I mean, of everybody on the show, I would say you're the most closest affiliated with Wilde and Tausch.
Uh-huh.
And you haven't felt guilty for not watching it.
No,
okay.
I haven't.
All right.
No.
And then there was the one last year that came out, or maybe it was earlier this year. It was like, I feel like it was out for a week, and it was distributed by Culver's and had Coach, a.k.a.
Coach.
Craig T. Nelson, as one of the stars. Like, he literally bets his farm on the Packers winning a Super Bowl, I believe the premise of that movie was. We haven't seen those either.
I have not seen that. No.
Okay. All right. Josh, you did not watch that one either.
Nope.
Again, no disrespect to Coach or Culver's.
I mean, Coach, a phenomenal TV show. Yep. B, Culver's. Yeah, fantastic. Everybody has a Culver's order. Everybody knows what it is.
Yep. Don't think I'll be viewing that.
Okay. I don't even know where to find. Like, I don't even know the name of the movie in order to find it.
Isn't it called, like, Bet the Farm? Or
no,
am I making that up?
I think you're making that up. I think that was like one of the taglines in the trailer that like, again, because once you saw the trailer, you're like, what is this? What am I looking at? But I'm just saying.
It is called Green and Gold.
Green and Gold.
Yeah. Came out in January.
How many other football or even just sports franchises? And maybe there are more because these are obviously low budget films.
Yeah.
How many other teams do you think have this many random movies associated with their teams, like Reggie's Prayer, the 60-yard line.
Well,
and green and gold.
I mean, that's
I feel like it's pretty unique to us.
That's what makes the Green Bay Packers America's team, Gabriel.
Again, I don't think that they're making Washington Commander movies like this.
I would think that's a smart thought by you.
Think people in Jacksonville would care if they made a 60-yard line? Tony Baselli starring? Like, I don't even know who they put in that thing.
Maurice Jones-Drew might make a cameo. Yeah. Yeah, no. The answer's no.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, again.
Well, and the point being, obviously, we love our team. We love the Green Bay Packers. And it seems like there's just been a Jordan Love discourse going on ever since the game on Sunday. And, you know, there's a portion of the fan base that wants to really criticize Jordan Love. There's a portion of the fan base that wants to defend his every last breath and he can do no wrong. Right? Oh, you should be able to look past this interception. I kind of live in the middle where, hey, I want Jordan Love to be really good. I want Jordan Love to be a Hall of Fame level quarterback because he's the quarterback of my favorite team. But that doesn't mean when he makes mistakes, you can't point them out. And I feel like Dan Orlovsky a couple of days ago on Get Up, made a really good point that I think really encapsulates where we're at right now with Jordan Love.
You have to take care of the football. And how many times have we talked about with Jordan Love, he always has these critical turnovers, especially the first
half. I don't mind the aggressive ones. I really don't. I don't mind the aggressive ones.
But you got to know in this game.
That's not an aggressive
turnover. That's not aggressive.
Yes. And in this game.
Right.
Like, I remember years ago, the first game of the season, it was the Bills and the Jets. And might have been when Aaron got hurt.
It was the night
And I remember, like, Josh, you got to grow up. Like, this, that's an immature performance. And I feel yesterday, Jordan Love is my MVP pick. I feel like Jordan, someone's got to be like, we got to grow up. You can't throw that ball. It's 3rd and 3. The worst thing to do is give that offense a short field. The Packers defense, to Micah's credit, was phenomenal yesterday. And they had skunked the Browns offense. Jordan, you got to grow up and not give that ball away, because you give them the ball, you give them the ball in the short field, you give them life, and all of a sudden the game flips.
I could not agree with Dan Orlovsky more there, because Jordan does have a propensity to throw these kind of, and again, the stuff I saw on social media, well, we watched Brett Favre throw these interceptions for years.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and Chewy has told the story multiple times of the coaching staff getting together and going, hey, should we put Brunell in? Hey, maybe it's time. Like, yeah, he's got a lot of talent, but he's got to take care of the football. He's got to be better. And I'm not sitting here going, oh, should we put Malik Willis in? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying that, but if he makes a mistake, he can be criticized. It's not that big of a deal if the quarterback gets criticized, because I can't agree more with that. He does have to grow up. And to illustrate further his point about the aggressiveness and the aggressive interceptions, the interception that was returned for a touchdown but then called back in the Detroit game.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that play.
Agreed.
Like, it was...
Agreed.
It was that Branch who made the play.
Yep.
First of all, that dude's phenomenal.
It's a very good player.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, as Frank Winters always said, hey, they get paid too. So he made a phenomenal play. Literally had to lay out, make a diving interception to make that play. Stuff like that happens. I have more of an issue with the ball that wasn't intercepted when he's kind of lobbed it out into the flat, where really the intended receiver, I guess, was Anzalone for the Lions, because he was the only person who had a chance to catch it. And it's that decision that, even though that's not an interception, you're going, huh, that's kind of weird. And then he throws the interception that ultimately brings the Browns back into the game on Sunday in Cleveland. And I could not agree with Dan Orlovsky more. Like, hey, we got to... Interceptions are going to happen. I get it. But can we cut down on these just baffling decisions that seemingly happen about once a game? You're going, huh, that was weird.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't fit with everything else that's been going around here. But that's, again, it's a part of growing. It's a part of maturing. And if Jordan Love grows and matures, hopefully from this decision, because it ultimately was part of a chain reaction of events that cost the Packers this game, I'm cool with that interception happening. But we gotta stop seeing these happen seemingly once a game, where you're going, the hell was that?
That's the point I was about to get on. It seems like once or twice a game through the first 2 years now plus with Jordan Love as the starter, you have a throw where you go, huh? I'm not seeing it. And again, I'm not paid $55 million to be an NFL quarterback. I'm drinking a beer on my couch, but I'm looking at that going, huh? I don't know about that. And again, I want to make it clear, because when we criticize Jordan Love, it's not us indicating how we feel about him as a quarterback. I think you and I would agree. He's a good quarterback.
He has proven through 2 years of being a quarterback in the NFL that he is a very capable NFL starter.
Yes.
This year, to me, for Jordan, is how high is that ceiling? How high can you play? What level can you play at over the course of 17 games as your third year as a starter? How high can you raise that ceiling, and how consistently can you get there?
I would say that was the goal last year, but obviously he dealt with a slew of injuries, and I don't think we ever saw the true ceiling for Jordan Love. And I would say already through 3 weeks this year, we've seen two really good games, and we've seen a fine game with a bad decision at the end of the game against Cleveland. He was fine most of that game.
Which, again, I am fine with Jordan was hurt last year. And in part, learning to play through injury, especially at that position, is a skill. And I think you have to kind of learn. And how can I still be a really productive player even when I'm dealing with injury? And even though you may not suffer that injury again, you kind of learn how to do it. I mean, obviously, Brett did it very famously. Yeah. Aaron did it and didn't get as much credit as Brett did, but Aaron still played through a slew of injuries and was still able to play at an incredibly high level. And I think, again, that is something that you have to learn. So I look at last year of, okay, they took a step forward as a team. Jordan, you were hurt, but hopefully now you know how to play hurt, and you can still be a very productive Jordan Love, even if you suffer another injury down the road. So I'm cool with that learning moment. And again, I'm going to be cool with this interception. I'm going to be cool with the one that wasn't intercepted against the Lions with Anzalone, as long as we start moving forward with, because, and look, It's about the consistency of it, too.
Correct.
Because even the best quarterbacks, even Aaron Rodgers, who has the best touchdown to interception ratio in NFL history, there were a couple of times in Aaron Rodgers' career you went, the hell was that?
Yeah. Very few and far between.
Few and far between. But that's what I'm saying. You got to cut down on the frequency of these. Mm-hmm. And when you cut down on the frequency of them, that's when you can start to reach that ceiling that we're talking about when it comes to Jordan.
Correct. And, you know, I was very bothered on Monday for several reasons. Obviously, losing to the Browns happened to be the main reason. But then my frustration on that came out on everything else. But there was that stat floating around that said Jordan Love hadn't thrown an interception in 9 games.
Well, because it was a regular season stat.
I know, and that was my issue with it. It was a regular season stat. He threw 3 interceptions in the game against Philadelphia, including 1 or 2 where you went, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And it happened the year prior in the divisional round against San Francisco where he threw that late interception.
Yeah,
where you
five interceptions in your last 2 playoff games, not great.
It's not a great stat, right? And that's where the growing up and the maturity and the maturation needs to happen overall, Gabe. And I got to be honest, I just wanted to say maturation. I think that's a fun word. All in all,
Is that part of your maturation process?
Yes, indeed. Calling myself out when I use words just because I think they're fun. I believe Jordan Love to be a good quarterback, maybe even a very good quarterback in the National Football League. I think that is the trajectory he's on and the level he's already on, and I think he's proven through now 2+ years as a starter.
I mean, just as a comparison, some of the guys around the same time, some of the guys that he signed massive contracts with, like the Dolphins are asking questions about Tua, right? Jacksonville asking questions about Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
And questions of like, hey, is this really going to be our guy? That's not the question I'm asking of Jordan Love.
I don't think anybody is. I mean, outside of a few texters and commenters who say, well, he's a backup, which we got that call yesterday.
Yeah,
on KBN.
And again, there's always going to be that fringe in every fan base, right? Like that's going to try to call
that,
out. Yeah. That's going to call out the quarterback or whatever player that we all know is good. And Jordan Love obviously is better than a backup quarterback.
But significantly better, I would argue.
Oh, yeah. Because he is... Without it, if the Packers released him today, he's starting in a lot of places tomorrow, right? So he's good enough, but the question is, can you raise that level? He came into this year as a top 12-ish quarterback, probably fringe top 10 just on the outside. Can you get to the point where you're consistently playing well enough, where you're inside that top 10, where you make Dan Orlovsky right, and you're an MVP candidate at the end of the season? That's the challenge for Jordan Love this year. And again, this is one bad game. I'm not giving up on Jordan Love. I'm not claiming he's trash like some people have thought that we claimed on Monday. That's not what I'm saying.
Nobody's saying
that. I'm not saying he was trash. It was a trash decision. Made one of them, and it was at a really bad
time. Was it a bad game for him?
Wasn't a good game.
I wouldn't say I wouldn't argue outside of the interception was a good game.
I thought it was a completely fine day. No, I would say it was a bad game.
Okay.
With that interception and a couple of the decisions he made, like at the end of the third quarter when he decided to snap it and then made it worse by not throwing the ball away and just taking a big sack.
Yeah. Running backwards. Yeah.
Yeah. And losing 11, 12 yards for no reason. Didn't have to happen.
12 might be generous.
So I think it was a bad game for Jordan.
Okay.
And bad games happen.
Yeah.
How do you bounce back from them? That's now the next step from Jordan.
Well,
you're going to have this bad game. Do you bounce back and play well?
The good news is they are playing the defense that has allowed the most points this year through 3 weeks in the Dallas Cowboys. So kind of a natural opportunity for them to bounce back, I would say.
They have made so many bad quarterbacks look good.
Yes,
and we're 3 weeks into
Russell
the season.
Russell Wilson has been benched through 3 weeks.
2 weeks
and
ago.
And he threw 500 yards on them.
2 weeks ago, set a career high in passing yards for a single game.
Jordan Love might throw for 1,000 yards on Sunday.
I'm licking my chops when we get to, well, I guess I won't be on Green Bay game day this Sunday, but, you know, put me down for a best bet of whatever the over-under for Matthew Gordon
is. Yeah, I can do that for you.
Just go ahead and mark me down there. Cheez-It, the legendary snack cracker. It's now available as a frozen pizza. Each crust is a giant, original Cheez-It flavor cracker crust that is square-shaped, ultra-thin, super crispy, and the perfect amount of Cheez-It flavor. Look, of course, there was going to be a square pizza. It has to be. That's what Cheez-It is. But when you're trusting Palermo's to come up with a creative pizza using Cheez-It as the crust, you know it's going to be fantastic. So keep an eye out. It's Italian four cheese, cheddar jack supreme, and pepperoni are the flavors you can get with the original Cheez-It pizza. And it's got one of the shortest bake times. You go from freezing to cheesing in as few as 8 minutes. Find Cheez-It frozen pizza in your favorite grocer's frozen pizza section.
You are listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
You called them a white stiff someone else. Earlier.
From one white stiff to another? I'm pretty well versed in the realm of stiffs.
On 94.5 ESPN.
So talking about Jordan Love, and just quick apologies to anybody out there who's trying to get a hold of us on that Carpless Talking text line, 800-990-3776. The text portion of that currently down. So if you've been texting, I don't know if the website that we use is collecting them and I'll see them later or if they're just getting sent back. But right now, the text portion of the Talking text line is not functioning. But you can always throw your hat in the ring when it comes to the YouTube chat, or you can just give us a call at 800-990-3776. When it comes to Jordan Love, he has been the main engine of this offense. Because I saw a stat, and Joshy, you can like continue to point this one out and have thrown it in there. We have not talked about it. You've thrown it into the document where we kind of procure a lot of the topics that we talk about on this show. And there is one stat through three games that is just a little surprising, just a little shocking. So Next Gen Stats has a statistic, an advanced statistic called rush yards over expected. And it's basically, again, telling you, hey, zero is, hey, that's what's expected of you. Anything over that is you ran better than what was blocked.
Yeah, it measures how many more yards a running back gained than an average runner would in that same situation. They use tracking data, game situation, all of that to determine those numbers.
Josh Jacobs dead last in the NFL with rush yards over expected at negative 53. So he is getting less yards than expected. And again, this factors in the offensive line. I'm not making an excuse for the offensive line.
Yeah.
Has not been good.
No.
They've ran against some pretty heavy boxes, but even in those situations, Josh Jacobs is not getting the yards that are expected out of him according to Next Gen Stats through three games.
Did we need Next Gen Stats to confirm that? Because I think it helps.
I think for the average fan, it's just, especially after watching the offensive line and the crappy performance that they put together on Sunday, I think it's easy to go, oh, Josh Jacobs isn't getting going this year.
I guess I think because
of the bad offensive line, when in reality, it's both. Josh Jacobs and the offensive line have both been terrible through three games.
But I would say the opportunity's been plentiful, right? When you think about that Detroit game, what do you have in the first half? Less than 10 yards? In a game they were dominating from start to finish. And obviously he got going a little bit in that second half against Detroit.
It's probably his best half that he's played.
Washington, he was good.
He wasn't good.
He had a lot of carries.
Yeah, he had a lot of carries.
And he could carry the ball like 25 times.
When your yards per carry is below four, I can't say that you're good.
That's fair.
Can't say that was a good performance.
And then, Sunday against Cleveland, I mean, he couldn't do anything.
16 carries for 30 yards.
That is less than 2 yards a carry.
Mm-hmm.
So that is half of what you look at as maybe a decent marker.
Yeah.
So that tells me bad. Math, not my specialty, but that's where I get at. So long and short here is, he's a good running back. In fact, I would argue he's a very good running back. Hasn't been this year. Gotten in the end zone each of the first two games. Didn't obviously score on Sunday because the only person that did who was on everybody's bingo card was John Fitzpatrick in terms of touchdowns. I'm not that worried, to be honest with you.
Okay, here's the
problem. That wasn't convincing.
Here's the problem.
Uh-oh.
When your voice goes that high to tell me you're not worried.
Josh?
I know you're worried.
Yeah, you're worried.
Yeah. I'm not that worried, guys.
Here's the thing I'm actually worried about. I don't love the help behind him. Right? Emmanuel Wilson's fine. We've talked plenty on this show when I've filled in about my feelings towards Emmanuel Wilson over the years. I'm an Emmanuel Wilson fan, but do I view him as like a, damn, they've got a really good 1-2 punch. Chris Brooks is a glorified fullback / kind of sometimes receiver, and Marshawn Lloyd can't stay on the field. So when you look at a team who, at least in last year, in Jacobs' first year with the Packers, seemed like they used the rush to open up the pass, and it worked a lot of the time last year for the Packers. It hasn't worked through three games. And sometimes you go, okay, well, let's mix it up. Let's get Emmanuel Wilson in there. Let's get Marshawn Lloyd in there. Give Jacobs a blow, and then hopefully he can rip off a big run when he comes back in. that's really not a viable option here in 2025. So, yeah, there's some concern to how just how dominant Josh Jacobs could be when we view him. And I think entering the season, fairly enough, we viewed him as a top five running back in the league.
I do want to add context to this. In 2024, with that same stat, rush yards over expected, Josh Jacobs had 217. That put him in company with Jahmyr Gibbs, Jonathan Taylor, Bijan Robinson, Chuba Hubbard, Bucky Irving were all in that.
It's decent company. Territory.
Yeah. So a lot of the running backs who played really well last year, that's where Josh Jacobs was living. Here's my problem. Am I concerned yet? No. Am I monitoring this? Yes. Like if we were doing the Seinfeld scale on this, I think I'd be a little stressed.
Okay.
Because running backs.
I'm stressed.
Running backs can fall off without notice very quickly. I know this is just three games.
Yeah.
But if this is something that continues against Dallas, if it's something that continues against Cincinnati out of the bye, this becomes concerning. Because especially those two teams, because those two teams stink on defense. And this, again, it's just worth monitoring. This is somebody who has, even though he's only 27, carried the rock a lot, whether it was last year here in Green Bay or his previous time when healthy in Las Vegas for the Raiders. It's just, maybe he's fine.
What do you need?
But knowing what I know about running backs and the history of running backs in the NFL and how quickly they can fall off, this becomes a little concerning.
I just got to know what you need then. Is it 100-yard game, wipe the hands clean, we're good, we're back?
And it doesn't necessarily have to be a 100-yard game, but I mean,
Average more than 4 yards a carry?
Again, starting at 4 yards a carry and having a couple of those games would be nice.
3.5, 3.7, 1.9 through three games this year.
Woof.
Yeah, 1.9 is very bad.
And again, if he cannot recapture that form, then the Packers have to pivot like they had to pivot once Jordan Love got injured last year. Because you can't build your offense around a running game if you can't get 4 yards a carry.
You can't build your offense around a running game if you don't have a running game. Is what I'm hearing.
So again, maybe he's fine and it's just off. He's a slow start. It's not a big deal. And that's what I'm hoping it is. But it's now crept up. I didn't think I was going to have to worry about this at all this year. And now it's kind of creeping up the list of, okay, kind of got to keep an eye on this now. Mm. Is this just a bad start or is this a sign of something else? And it makes me just a little bit concerned for that running game. Again, maybe he's fine. Maybe he goes off and has 200 yards against Dallas this week.
And then you wipe the hands clean and you put it in the back pocket.
If you're looking for a new car, truck, or SUV, take the nearest exit. And look, it doesn't have to be far because Ewald is everywhere. Ewald Automotive 2025 model year clearance pricing. Save over $14,000 or get 0% financing. All makes, all models over 720. 25's in stock with model year clearance pricing. And with the Ewald low price guarantee, they will beat your best price on a new vehicle by $500 or they give you $500 cash. It's only at the Ewald Model Year Clearance Sales Event. When they're gone, they're gone. Ewald makes it easy. It all starts at ewaldauto.com.
Everyone's go-to source for all NFL news.
And we're going to get right to some breaking news here that just came down. This tweet from Adam Schefter.
Adam's on the phone. Adam, yeah, you have more news? What do you got?
They're going with another move.
And here is the man who knows all, Adam Schefter.
And Joshy's biggest fan.
It's nice to see Josh at the big boy table. Thank you, everybody. Keep up the good work, Josh.
It's ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter on JGC is sponsored by Island Resort and Casino. Gaming, casual, and fine dining. Two golf courses, a luxury spa, and live entertainment. Your total experience is at the Island. Also brought to you by Tony Wendorf & Associates. First Weber Real Estate Services. The real estate MVPs of Wisconsin. Get started today at WendorfTeam.FirstWeber.com.
Yeah, that really started last week, the week of Joshy. So, Adam, I know you're a big fan of Joshy, and maybe you're the number one fan, but you have competition in that fan club with Brewers COO Marty Ronski. She also loves Joshy, professed her love for Joshy on our show last week. So, just know you've got some competition in that fan club.
Well, that's the way it goes. I'm happy to compete for Josh's love.
Appreciate you, Adam. You're the best.
Does Adam know the big news?
We all could love him. I mean, that's possible. I mean, that's the way it goes, and he's deserving and worthy of all the praise and love that he gets.
All right, there we go. And some more love for our producer, Josh DiMaggio.
Executive producer.
Yeah, executive producer. Got here the promotion. At ESPN Milwaukee. So, Shefty.
Hey, before you ask me anything.
Yeah.
being that Jen's gone, we could go heavy duty into the Ryder Cup.
Okay, oh, look.
That's what I heard.
Look, had the Packers not lost to the Browns, I was fully prepared to just make this a Ryder Cup segment. Because, yeah. I mean, again, we don't... Sunday's kind of tough with the singles, but I'm guessing you're diving headfirst into Ryder Cup action and just paying attention all day Friday and Saturday.
You know, I love golf during the season when I'm following it and tracking it and have my pool going. And I'll be paying attention, but I'm not going to be consumed with it. And maybe that's un-American, and maybe that's not... the way a great golf fan would be, but I just feel like once football season starts, my focus is in one place.
So when you're sitting there on NFL Countdown on Sunday, there's not going to be a screen somewhere that has some of these singles matches on. It's just going to be all NFL games as you're sitting there and everybody's kicking off at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern.
Not only will there not be a screen on the Ryder Cup, but I would say that there'll probably be a screen on the Viking Steelers in Dublin. That's
oh yeah, that's right. Forgot about that.
I would imagine that I'll watch some Ryder Cup on Friday and Saturday. Definitely, I'd like to do that. But on Sunday, you know what? We go into a viewing room where we watch the games, me and my colleagues, and I think there's eight TVs in front of us, and then there's some TVs to the sides. Maybe they'll put the Ryder Cup on to the side, maybe, and maybe I'll glance up a couple of times, but my focus will be on football.
Well, is there anybody else who is, because I consider you a golf nut at this point, Adam, like as much as we've talked golf on this show, is there anybody else that's a part of the crew that's in there watching those games that's also a golf nut that, yeah, look, we got to pay attention to these games. They are the most important thing, but maybe one of those side TVs, you know, just kind of keep an eye and see how, you know, just our guy Scottie Scheffler's doing in a singles match.
Well, we're in New York City, and it's kind of a smaller room, and it's the guys from Countdown, so it'll be Greeny. Greeny will have interest in Ryder Cup.
Okay, yeah, I was about to say, Greeny's a golf guy.
Greeny will have some interest in Ryder Cup, but he usually only stays for a half, and then he goes home and watches the second half with his family. But the Jets are Monday night, so I don't know how that's going to impact him. Rex, I don't think he's a big golf guy. Randy Moss, not a big golf guy. Teddy, I don't think a big golf guy. Alex Smith might have interest, but not a big golf guy. So I don't think there'll be any clamoring. Now, if I were in Bristol, where we used to be in that room, Chris Berman definitely would have a team Ryder Cup, definitely. And, you know, I'd be happy to have it there. But again, like I said, once football season starts, that's where my focus kind of goes.
All right.
Yeah, if you've got a football question, yeah, if you want to go to a football question, I think we've dominated enough of the golf talk here with Adam Schefter.
You know, I am surprised by that, though.
Hold on. So who's going to win?
Oh, I've got Team USA 16-12.
16-12, huh? Why 16-12? And who's going to play well?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think Scotty's going to play well. I have really high hopes for Cameron Young. I think he's going to be really good for Team USA. And maybe it's just my friends, Adam, but they don't seem to believe in J.J. Spaun the way I believe in J.J. Spaun. He has quietly been one of the best Americans all year long. He is a ball-striking machine. I think he's going to play really well for Team USA. So those are my top three guys for the U.S. squad.
J.J. Spaun's pretty clutch. I could see that happening. And Morikawa has been pretty good in competitions like these. He's had a pretty good history, as has JT. But so do some of the Europeans, so we'll see how that goes. We now can go on to the football part of the program.
I don't understand the scoring, but we'll get to that in another time. 16-12, go USA. Micah Parsons returns to Dallas on Sunday, Adam. And obviously Jerry Jones has plenty of things to say about it. What do you make of this return game? How big is it for Micah? How big is it for Jerry Jones and the Cowboys to see their old friend return back to Dallas?
Not going to be a great time for them to have this happen, not under the best of circumstances, not in a situation where the Dallas Cowboys are heavy underdogs at home. Like, think about that. Like, I don't know what the exact line is or the spread, but I think it's something close to a touchdown, right?
Last I saw, 6.5, yes.
Okay, well, that's close to a touchdown. And for the Cowboys to be nearly touchdown underdogs at home tells you where they're at. Now, also, they get the Packers after a loss. Like, this would not be the week when I'd want to get the Green Bay Packers, where the Packers go on the road and get shown up in Cleveland, embarrassed. Like, I would think the Packers are going to play a strong game this week. Dallas is reeling defensively. It's lost some key players to injury. C.D. Lamb, Tyler Booker, their first-round draft pick. They already were missing their center, Beebe. So it's just the timing's not great for Dallas, but this is the spot that the Cowboys are now in.
I think one of the injury concerns right now for the Packers is that offensive line. Zach Tom tried to play through an oblique injury, made it one play in the game at Cleveland. Do you have any idea how long he could potentially miss now? Or is it just kind of a mystery? Because that's, again, I think obliques, Adam, I think like baseball players. I don't think offensive linemen, and it always seems to be a pretty tricky injury to know when you're fully ready to go.
Well, I don't have the specifics, but I could just, from a standpoint like anybody else out there, surmise that if you're going out there one play and you suffer a setback and you're out there, you've probably set yourself back longer than you would have been if you hadn't pushed the issue. So that, you know, just the day unraveled for the Green Bay Packers on Sunday, that was the start of it. And it just didn't seem to get any better at all. Very discouraging for them. And, you know, I guess here's the thing. If they add Zach Tom to IR on Saturday, you'll know that it's bad. And I'm just going to guess, not knowing anything, I'm going to be very clear. My guess is that's going to be a possibility. Just a guess.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. By the way, Adam Schefter on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, brought to you by Tony Wendorf & Associates, just like the moves made in the pros. Tony Wendorf & Associates, First Weber Group, helps people make their own big moves every day. Trusted knowledge, superior service. They're the real estate MVPs of Wisconsin. So, Adam, if the Packers are this beat up at the offensive line position, just in general, how hard is it to acquire competent offensive linemen at this point in the season? Because it seems like it's at a premium across the league.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last time that I remember a quality offensive lineman being dealt in season. Like, off the top of my head, I can't even think of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's already a shortage of quality offensive linemen. Every team's looking for them. No team's getting rid of them. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, trade deadline deals, you know, a wide receiver, a pass rusher, a linebacker, maybe a corner. Every now and then you get a quarterback, Carson Pot. Like, when is the last time you could remember an offensive lineman being moved at the trade deadline? I don't remember it.
Yeah,
I was
hoping you would remember something so I could give me hope that maybe the Packers could at least improve their depth at that position, but My fear was everybody kind of hoards offensive linemen, and it's hard to find just even backup offensive linemen out there.
Well, and that's why, you know, you draft them and you develop them and you have them on your practice squad and you kind of home grow them and make sure that there's an ample supply of depth there. Again, the Packers are not unique and alone there. Mm-hmm. Every team is always looking for more offensive line depth. It just we just talked about the Dallas Cowboys losing their guard and their center. We just talked about it. So you want them to go trade for somebody too? Like, I mean,
I mean, preferably not, to keep the market down. You know, that way the Packers don't have to pay as much. But yeah, it just kind of seems like they're stuck with what they have in terms of offensive linemen.
I'm curious if I put in. Let me see something here. Hold on one second. Keep talking. I'm going to check something.
Okay. Talking with Adam Schefter again, brought to you by Tony Wendorf & Associates here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy each and every Wednesday. Yeah, it's just offensive line play. I was scared of that answer from Adam.
Yeah, well, it's a fact, though, right? I mean, now he talks about developing offensive linemen and how they're homegrown, something the Packers historically have been very good at. And then you see their first-round pick have three false starts and allow a blocked field goal. So doesn't make you feel a whole lot better about that depth. Go ahead, Adam.
Last year, the Jacksonville Jaguars traded Cam Robinson to the for a conditional seventh round pick.
All right.
And in the offseason, Robinson left and he went to Houston, and Houston drafted some offensive linemen. And in the final cut down date, the Texans were looking to deal Cam Robinson. So Cam Robinson would be a name that I would say if the Packers have any interest, which I would guess.
Again, it could probably depend upon the severity of this, the oblique injury for Zach Tom.
That would be a guy that I would think would be available if right, that interests okay. you.
There you go.
But that's the level of player you're talking about. Essentially, he's been on three teams in less than a year.
Look, Adam, the Packers had 17 penalties, 14 accepted, and a lot of those were on the offensive line. I am interested in any name that you say could be available as an offensive lineman. I don't know if the Packers are, but as a fan, I'd be interested in just about anything you're selling right now.
Let me say this, too. The Cleveland defensive line is very strong.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're good.
Very strong. And the week before, Derrick Henry couldn't do anything against them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a Green Bay issue. I think that's a good defense, better defense than people realize. And so maybe Green Bay's offensive line is not as in bad a shape as you might think, but we'll see.
Bad shape, but maybe not as bad as we think. Adam Schefter with us on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Adam, the NFC North was the best division in football last year, three playoff teams. Now through 3 weeks, we see just how good the Lions are, despite losing both of their coordinators. Carson Wentz resurgence tour maybe for Minnesota after a win this week. Obviously, the Packers at 2-1. How do you view the hierarchy of this division through 3 weeks?
I think that, you know, through 2 weeks before Green Bay lost to Cleveland, everybody was ready to anoint them. Obviously, there's undefeated talk and Super Bowl talk. And I think the Packers have one of the better teams, one of the best teams in the NFC. I think the Lions, clearly, I watched them on Monday night and was really impressed the way they played there. I don't think they care if they have to go on the road or play at home, but it feels like they've been knocking at the door and trying to get through. The Eagles have won 19 of 20, 19 of their 20 last games, and I think Tampa Bay is one of the more unheralded teams. I didn't mention any teams out west because I just don't view them. Well, but the Rams, they're good. Don't forget about them. So I think, you know, we've talked in recent years about the AFC being really strong. I got to tell you something. I think there's been a little bit of a paradigm shift, and I think the NFC might be more top-heavy right now than the AFC. In fact, I feel quite confident about that because Philly has been awesome. Detroit has been tremendous. Green Bay is loaded. The Rams are tough. Tampa Bay is unheralded. That's five teams that I can make an argument. Any one of them could go to the Super Bowl and you wouldn't be surprised. We didn't even mention San Francisco, Washington, Minnesota. I mean,
and not all those teams can make the playoffs.
Yeah, that's
Adam.
Eight teams.
Yeah, not all those teams can make the postseason. Only seven get in. Before we let you go, can you recall a weekend as crazy as this one in terms of special teams, especially with all the blocked kicks that we saw?
No, like every week you get into that 345, 355 window,
mm-hmm.
and it's crazy what's going on. Like there's a 5 or 10 minute stretch that, wow, I mean, it's unbelievable. It all leads up to that. And sometimes you get a couple of games going. Sometimes you get more than that going. Sometimes maybe it's just a game. This was really weird. Like this was the Jets blocked their kick literally moments apart from the Eagles blocking the Rams kick. Just some crazy
special teams. And both those
led
to touchdowns. The Packers had a kick blocked somewhere in that same time that eventually led to the Browns win in there as well.
Like 3 and 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, it was the highest number of block kicks that turn games and on a weekend. It was unusual. But I got to be honest, like every weekend's unusual. Every weekend has something. Just happened to be block kicks this weekend. That was the theme. I don't know why, but it was. There'll be another theme this weekend. We'll see what that one is. But that's why people are tuning in, because their bets and fantasy matchups are swung in those final minutes with crazy that you wouldn't imagine.
Well, I mean, that's the Eagles block kick and then Davis scooping and scoring. That got them to cover. That got the cover for the Eagles. So, yes, I'm sure that helped some people and hurt some. Adam, certainly appreciate the time. Always love talking to every Wednesday, buddy. Hey, happy Ryder Cup week, my friend.
You guys, I appreciate it. Have a great day. Enjoy the Ryder Cup this weekend. Thanks for having me, and we'll be back next week.
Adam Schefter joins us each and every Wednesday here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, and he's brought to us in part by the Island Resort and Casino. If you're looking for an all-in-one trip, the Island Resort and Casino has you covered. Championship golf, gaming, spa, dining, and live entertainment, all in one epic destination. Book your total experience now at islandresortsandcasino.com.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Tuna. Dating app. It's tuna.
I love tuna. I had some last night.
How do you eat your tuna?
Can we for once grow up on this show?
On 94.5 ESPN.
It's a Wendorf Wednesday here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy at Tony Wendorf & Associates, First Weber Group. They believe in the human side of real estate, faith, family, friends. They move fast, negotiate with confidence, and communicate clearly so their clients win, no matter if it's buying or selling. Get started today at WendorfTeam.FirstWeber.com.
Yesterday on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, we did something we don't typically do, and that is talk Wisconsin football. Because, well, let's be honest, they haven't given us a ton to talk about in the Luke Fickell era. And we discussed the comments that Barry Alvarez made on his show on our sister station, ESPN Madison, Barry Alvarez Show, every Monday night over there on ESPN Madison. You can always check it out in the podcast form or listen live with the ESPN Wisconsin app. Should we just go ahead and listen to those comments, Josh?
I think they're impactful enough that they're worth hearing.
All right, so this was Monday night, and here is what Barry Alvarez had to say about how things went down when Wisconsin lost to Maryland this past Saturday.
Coach, what do you make of how fans have reacted here
so far? I think it's embarrassing. I think it's terrible, despicable. They're spoiled rotten. Here's a team that you got young players trying to come on. They're competing. They're going to have a chance to get better, and you flip on them early in the season, and you flip on them, and you're chanting for the coach. What do you think that makes? How do you think that makes the players feel?
Exactly.
And that's
a great
just,
point, Coach.
That's disrespectful. It's not loyal. You're not a fan. If I'm a person sitting next to me, boom, I tell, get your ass out of here. We don't need you in here. You don't want to watch this. Go someplace else. Go boo in a bar. You know, I just, that really upsets me.
So those were his comments. And I would say, especially in the sports space, it's rare to get that many people on one side. But it seemed like most people disagreed with where Barry Alvarez was coming from. Because if Barry's being honest, at the end there, he goes, you don't want to watch this, Coach? I know you don't want to watch that. whatever that was on the field at Camp Randall Stadium on Saturday, I guarantee you don't want to watch
that. I think we could all agree, nobody wants to watch the Wisconsin Badgers on their home field, which is named after that man, Barry Alvarez Field, losing by 24 points in the fourth quarter to Maryland, who historically not a good football school.
When you're favored by 9.5.
Yeah.
Those comments were roundly dismissed by about everyone except for those who were financially incentivized not to disagree with them.
That's true.
So this apparently got back to Barry, and he has an update.
It did, yes. Barry speaking with Jim Polzine, the great reporter with the Wisconsin State Journal yesterday. So apparently Barry's wife, Cindy, who is a lovely human, alerted him that his comments have certainly made the rounds on social media. Barry is not very online. Apparently Cindy is, so good for Cindy. But so Alvarez spoke yesterday, as I mentioned, with Jim Polzine. He said this, quote, "While I think more than anything else, I tend to overreact at times," Alvarez said, following the self-assessment with a chuckle. "I meant what I said, but I think the way I said it, I'm sure I overreacted." And then he goes on to say, "You're there to support your team and your coach. They've got recruits there to help them in the future, and you're booing players. Every coach knows they're going to be criticized. That's part of their job. But, man, I don't like that for the kids."
Yeah, and again, I think there's just a little disconnect there for the kids are getting paid now. And with that money comes Correct. Some additional responsibility for the kids. Again, I am not a fan that goes and boos, but I also understand if you do. I mean, I want to clarify. Because famously, last year, I was at the Brewers-Mets game where my mother was booing
Jesse Winker.
Jesse Winker.
Oh, that's deserved.
So
you can boo opponents.
I will boo opponents. I will not boo my own team.
I agree with that.
But I also understand the people who do. I'm not saying, I'm just saying that's my decision. If you want to boo the team you root for.
You bought the ticket, dude. You're allowed to do whatever you
want.
I've never been to a game this bad, though. I might have booed them off the field in that first half.
And if that if you did, I'd completely understand it. I used the example on Tuesday, Joshy, of or yesterday, I guess that was. Kind of getting my day straight here. I was at the Bucks game where they lost by like 50 to the Utah Jazz toward the very end of the Adrian Griffin era, which obviously was not very long. And that Fiserv was full of boo birds, understandably so, especially after they gave up five consecutive offensive rebounds. Yeah, it's an effort thing. You give up that many offensive rebounds in a row, there's some bigger issues going on. I understand the booing. I understand the booing and the chanting and everything that happened because Wisconsin football has a proud tradition. And Barry, as we discussed yesterday, is in between a rock and a hard place because he is obviously very frustrated with what has happened to what he created. And we said this yesterday. I think Evan Cohen said this yesterday when he joined Wilde and Tausch. I think there's a part of him that hears those boos and takes them personally, that he feels he's being booed because of how tightly connected he is still to the University of Wisconsin football. And he takes that personal. But additionally, I know he's frustrated with what's happened to this program.
Of course. Everybody is.
And I know he's frustrated because he said it last year. He said it last year when the bowl streak came to an end, his frustrations of something that he started 20 years ago coming to a close last season. He is obviously frustrated, but also he handpicked the successor, the man in charge of the athletic department in Chris McIntosh. So he's stuck between being disappointed and frustrated with the football program, but also he wants to back his guy and give him a chance to succeed. So it's just a tough, it's a tough space, I think, for Barry to occupy when Wisconsin's football struggling the way it is.
I think you're absolutely correct on all of that. The other part I would make, though, and I made this point yesterday on KBN, well, two-part. Number one, I don't think the fans in Camp Randall Stadium the other day were necessarily booing the players, right? This isn't boo, we hate you, leave Wisconsin. This is, I mean, given what the chants were not, you all suck. That wasn't the chant. It was fire, fickle. They were booing the head coach, and they were booing the disappointment that has continuously occurred since he took over as the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers in November of 2022. It's been disappointment since then. This program has not been able to flip the switch that we've seen other programs in the Big Ten flip. Say, Maryland or Indiana or Illinois with the old friend Brett Bielema. These are programs that have changed how they do things in the era of NIL. And Wisconsin, a heavy hitter in the scene of college football for 30 years since Barry Alvarez took over as the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers in the mid-90s, is no longer a heavy hitter. In fact, when people look at Wisconsin on their schedule now, they go, oh yeah, we're going to win that game. And that's sad for everybody involved because when Barry was the head coach and the athletic director, that was never the case. You feared Wisconsin. Nobody fears Wisconsin anymore, and that's sad.
My question for you two who pay attention to Wisconsin football closer than I do. The narrative I am now seeing online is that Wisconsin does not spend or have enough to spend on their football program. Like, again, not even saying, hey, they should spend what Ohio State and Michigan do, but my assumption was, hey, yeah, they're never going to spend that much. They're not going to spend as much as Oregon. They don't have those resources. But they could probably spend as much as Indiana or Illinois, teams that are in the top 25 that have those chances. But it seems like the narrative out there is that they do not have the same resources as even Indiana and Illinois. So is that correct? Is that incorrect?
It's hard to nail down exactly how much is being spent on NIL and who's getting what and how much of that is being distributed. They certainly have one of those funds that everyone seems to have.
Yeah, the collective. Because I've even seen, Joshy, people going back to when Bielema was here saying, hey, this has always been a pretty cheap operation.
Yes.
Because Bielema would have assistant coaches leave because they could go get jobs. Even though they'd be a lateral move, they'd be getting a significant pay raise. And that was one of Brett's problems when he was in Wisconsin of trying to retain coaches because they would just leave for more money.
One of the big things we can definitively say is different and probably less of an investment than it should be is the level of recruiting, the recruiting specialists, and the people whose jobs are dedicated to all of that. Many of the programs around the country have whole staffs built out in terms of high school and transfer recruitment that are like led by like 10-person teams. Wisconsin famously let some guy go to Penn State, whose name's escaping me, who was like one of the large reasons they thought that they were able to bring in some of those kids back during the end of the Crist era. So the investment in spending on staff to bring in recruits and to get them in and to be in their ear 24/7 and do all the right things, that seems to be where Wisconsin is falling short.
Yeah, that was Donovan Harbor, yes, is the offensive lineman from Catholic Memorial who ended up at Penn State. Corey Smith also ended up at Penn State from Catholic Memorial. Both of those guys, I don't know if Fickell has ever done this, but I was at the game. I was doing the game right here on 94.5 ESPN. They were playing out at Wisconsin Lutheran and the field they have out there. I can't remember who, if they were playing Wisconsin Lutheran or just who they happened to be playing out there. But Penn State was playing at Northwestern. James Franklin, mm-hmm, came in on a helicopter to check in and watch on those guys, and he was there for the first half.
A helicopter?
To watch those. Yeah, came in on a helicopter, took a helicopter.
Oh, wow.
He landed it on the soccer field adjacent out at that complex they have.
Oh, right there.
Right there.
Oh, that's
landed
fun.
The helicopter on the soccer stadium so he could come and check in on those two. Obvious. I don't know if Wisconsin got helicopter money to be checking in on recruits when, you know, you happen to be on a road trip in a portion of the country where maybe you have a couple of those, but that's just an example to me of, okay, are you spending that type of money? Do you have that type of money to spend? Yeah. I don't know. A question here from Ian in East Troy on the Car Blues Talk at text line, which is back up and running, by the way.
Yeah, there we go.
800-990-3776. When Fickell is done at Wisconsin, will he be looked at as the worst coach in the last 30 years, surpassing Gary Anderson? He already is the worst coach in the last 30 years, surpassing Gary Anderson. Because as bad as the Gary Anderson...
That's not the question!
As bad as the Gary Anderson era was, at least he went to bowl games.
Gabe!
What?
He said when he's done.
He already is, though. If you look at... Rank the last... The coaches of the last...
As it stands right now, yes, he is. But the question is when he's done.
At the end of the year. Seriously, I was watching.
No, you're right.
I was watching.
I'm trying to find any reason for optimism.
The Dan Le Batard Show was talking about Wisconsin football yesterday. The Dan Le Batard Show.
What'd they have to say?
Nothing good.
Nothing good.
Oh, really?
Their college football. Lucy Roden is the woman they have that she goes to a ton of college football games. She's everyone loves college football like more than I could love anything possibly. Like this is how much she loves college football.
You and golf.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. And she doesn't think Wisconsin's winning a game for the rest of the season.
I don't either.
If they don't win the game for the rest of the season, guess what happens to Fickell at the end?
Bye, bye, bye.
So he is worse than Gary Anderson. And it's not particularly close.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you.
It's not particularly close. We've got some more things to dive into in hour two. Jen, Gabe, and Chewy starts in 2 minutes.
More Jen, Gabe, and Chewy coming up on 94.5 ESPN.